Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Coming up on the Eurotrip, things are looking lovely in Luxembourg and intriguing in Ireland.
It's time for the Eurotrip.
The Eurotrip, when I read that, I was immediately thinking of the movie. Do you know the movie?
Hi, I'm Leanne.
Hello, Leanne. Leanne, are you a Eurotrip podcast listener?
I am, yes. I should say, I met some Eurotrip fans here. I was chatting with people outside the entrance, and they said, oh, are you Bella Quist? And I said, yeah. I know you're from the Eurotrip.
What did you have for breakfast?
It was last night. I did not have a kebab for breakfast.
Queen Laureen, Eurovision winner. Did you ever think you would be back here again?
I get goosebumps. No way.
Martin Osterdahl, Executive Supervisor of the Eurovision Song Contest. Welcome to the Eurotrip.
Thank you very much. Welcome back, I think it is, right?
Hello and welcome to the Eurotrip, the world's favourite Eurovision podcast with me, James.
Me, Rob.
And this week, we are going behind the scenes on two of the most anticipated, I think it's fair to say, Eurovision national selections for 2024.
But where are we heading? Where are we talking about, I Hear You Cry? Well, on the podcast today, we are going behind the scenes. In Ireland, we got the long-awaited list of artists and songs for Eurosong last week. Well, we're talking to the main man, Ireland's head of delegation, Michael Keeley, one of the most talked-about individuals in the world of Eurovision. James, he's on the podcast this week.
Yes, he is, and he is incredibly candid. It's been a year since we last spoke to him, and we thought it's high time to get him back on to find out everything about Eurosong 2024. It's got a new host, Patrick Keelty. It's got six brand new songs, which are going down a storm, it's fair to say, within the Eurovision community. So Michael Keeley, the head of delegation for Ireland, he's back to give us all the gossip.
And, of course, 2024 sees the return of one of Eurovision's most successful nations. Luxembourg will be taking to the stage in Malmö, and we are going behind the scenes of their selection show as well. Jan Bors was formerly the Czech Republic, or Czechia's head of delegation at the Eurovision Song Contest, and he was on the jury selecting the songs that are competing in Luxembourg. So he'll be telling us even more about that selection and what we can expect when it rolls around at the end of this month.
We've got all the latest Eurovision news, of course, and all the updates on all those artists who are wanting to do Eurovision yet again.
We've got all that and more still to come. You're listening on Acast, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. This is the Eurotrip.
So here we go then, two big guests to bring you on today's episode to take you behind the scenes, as we say. But also, I'm gonna tease this for you now so you can wait and hear it a little bit later on. But when I chat to Michael Keeley, he receives a very interesting phone call mid-conversation. We're having a great chat about Eurosong and he is rudely interrupted by his mobile phone.
Very, very much looking forward to that. You've told me what happened and I can't wait for everyone else to hear it.
So plenty to bring you. But quickly, Rob, thanks from me to you for holding the fort last week.
Well, you said thank you to me for covering you on the podcast last Wednesday. A huge thank you to you, of course, on behalf of myself and also all of the listeners, because we know you have absolutely loved that episode where James was chatting to Lee and Will all about the decision to choose Ollie Alexander. James, I have some news.
What, have you heard the song?
Yeah, can you imagine? No, unfortunately I've not. However, I can tell you that I have just received word, and you don't know this, that last week we were in the top 20 music podcasts in the United Kingdom.
Were we? Oh, that's good news. That's impressive.
Isn't it nice? Also funny, because I feel like we don't actually spend a lot of time talking about music, so I feel like a bit of a fraud.
But we did have somebody on from BBC Music, so I guess it kind of ticks the list, doesn't it, for us?
Yeah, I think we can just about get away with it. Obviously, you know, we've said there, clearly loads of you have been listening to get us into the chart. But I have to say, thank you to those of you that have been leaving comments, getting in touch with us, saying how much you enjoyed the podcast. I read out a few of those on the pod on Wednesday, but also a few of you have been in touch. James, I know you're an Apple guy. I'm a Spotify guy. You maybe don't know this, but on Spotify, don't forget, if you are listening on Spotify, you can leave comments on the episodes that you listen to. So you can let us know what you thought of the episode on Spotify if you want to. Jess did on the Ollie Alexander episode. She said, amazing. Love you guys. Mark said, fascinating. This is the kind of content I'm here for. Keep up the amazing work. Best Eurovision pod out there. Now that is one surefire way to get your review read out here on the podcast.
Yeah, just call us your favourite podcast and we'll read you out immediately. Waiting for all the messages to flood in now.
Well, if you want to let us know what you think of the podcast, whether that be on Spotify, Apple Podcasts or elsewhere, don't forget we are on socials. We are at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter, on Instagram, we're on Threads as well, and we're on TikTok. All of our exclusive stories are over on eurotrippodcast.com. And if you want to send us an email, you can do that as well. That is hello@eurotrippodcast.com.
It's time then for all the latest Eurovision news, which, over the last 7 days, there has been quite a bit, because it is January, and it does really feel like we've shifted up a gear into proper national final season. Of course, we had a few national finals and a few bits of news before the new year and before Christmas, but when January rolls around, it really feels like the beginning. And two new artists have been announced.
You're going to get yourself in trouble, because do you remember before Christmas, you called San Remo a national final? Do you remember that? Well, you've just called Festival of Kengas a national final now, haven't you?
Yeah, but I'm going to use my same excuse because they're both de facto national finals. They both represent what a national final is all about. Even if they predate Eurovision or their Eurovision participation, it still is a national selection.
Yeah, the way that you delivered that sentence tells me that you aren't entirely convinced in your own argument, but sure. But yeah, we got two new names, didn't we, for Eurovision since we spoke to you last week. Representing Georgia, Nutsa Buzaladze, who, James, was on American Idol in 2023.
And that name came so out of the blue. Nobody was expecting that one. So nice to have Georgia confirmed at song release at a later date. But also, we're recording on Tuesday this week, and bright and early, I think, for us in the UK, I certainly wasn't up at 6:30 a.m. when they announced that that it's Colleen for Austria, Rob.
Yeah, did you know, and I didn't realise this, that Colleen has quite a long history with both the Eurovision Song Contest and the Junior Eurovision Song Contest?
Yeah, she's got quite the CV, hasn't she? Sort of more behind the scenes rather than in front of the camera.
Yeah, so I'm reading this from the ORF official press release, so the Austrian broadcaster, when they announced that Colleen would be representing them. Since 2018, Colleen has been involved in the Eurovision Song Contest, initially as a stand-in lead artist for the rehearsals of several countries, and as a dancer and choreographer for the interval acts in Lisbon. And then in 2021, she was creative director for the Junior Eurovision Song Contest for Spain and Bulgaria, as well as the creative director for Spain and the stage director for the entire production. in 2022. And then last year in 2023, she supported Austria, Armenia, Germany and Georgia with their stage performances at the Eurovision Song Contest in Liverpool. So we often say, don't we, when it comes to artists that are selected to represent their country, do they know what they're letting themselves in for? Colleen absolutely knows what she's letting herself in for.
She definitely does, doesn't she? I saw a video earlier on as well. You mentioned in 2018 in Lisbon, she was one of the stand-in rehearsal artists. So this is before any of the actual artists get to Eurovision. Of course, they've got to do loads of rehearsals and they get stand-in performers. And there was a video circling earlier on of her performing Fuego. And man alive, she nailed that, I tell you. So I think we're going to get a very confident performance from her in Malmö later this year.
Really exciting, James, to see, of course, what Finland have got in store for us. We were talking about national finals. Well, the songs are coming out, aren't they, over the last few days and the couple of days to come that are competing to represent Finland. Envious, or rather, unenviable position for whoever is representing Finland this year. Because how do you follow Carrier? That is tricky, isn't it?
How do you follow him? But then you see the quality of the songs that they're releasing so far, that we've heard at least, and the quality is just on another level again. Finland, YLE, the broadcaster over there, just knock it out of the park. The last few years, they've just been on another level, haven't they? It seems that one year they just woke up and thought, Eurovision, we want this. We want it again.
Yeah, I really, 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 really want to get somebody behind the scenes with UMK on the podcast, because I think it'd be fascinating to talk about Finland's Eurovision revival. Because if you look at where they've come from since, well, they NQ'd, didn't they, in 2019? And then where they've come from since, really, really interesting conversation to be had there, I'm sure. And also special mention for Windows 95 Man, whose song is coming out today, or song has come out today, if you're listening on the day of release. Because Windows 95 Man, I saw a video of them performing beforehand, like performing a concert earlier on this year. And they also have a Clippy. Do you remember Clippy?
The little paper clip.
The little paperclip that used to be like a little mascot for older versions of Windows used to pop up on Microsoft Word. There is a Clippy on stage. So we might see Clippy at the Eurovision Song Contest in Malmö, which is exciting. And yeah, another couple of national finals, of course, that took place over the weekend. We had the first show of Melody Grand Prix. Former Eurovision Norwegian representative, Margaret Berger, of course, went through. So she'll be in the final of MGP at the start of next month. And also, James, Lithuania held their first show for their selection, which is sadly no longer translates as Let's Try Again, which is a real shame.
But speaking of national finals, let's go behind the scenes, as we've been teasing already, of two of the most hotly anticipated national finals of the 2024 season. We'll get to Ireland and Michael Keely, the Irish head of delegation, very shortly. But first, Rob, the return of Luxembourg.
If you'd have said to me that on this podcast, 12 months ago, that we'd be talking about a national final in Luxembourg for their return to the contest, I'd have said you're a fool, James. But look at us now. Because, yeah, Luxembourg are back. As I said earlier on, one of the most successful Eurovision nations, of course, as we know. And they are returning to the contest for the first time in a long time in Malmö. Which, of course, meant earlier in the year, they had a blank sheet of paper. How were they going to handle their selection process? Were they going to pick internally, or were they going to go down the route that they have done and have their own national final? Very ambitious plans for a small broadcaster and one that has been out of the Eurovision game for so long. So naturally, when it came down to narrowing down the shortlist of songs that would eventually compete in that national final, they thought they would rely on the expertise of some other Eurovision experts from elsewhere in Europe. Now, just a couple of those names involved. Of course, Alex Panayi, James, he represented Cyprus in the mid-90s, was one of the first guests here on the Eurotrip podcast that I remember speaking to. Christa Björkman, of course, as well, a name that we can't not mention when it comes to Eurovision. He was on the jury narrowing down those songs. And then another person involved was Jan Bors. Now, Jan, you may know, was the head of delegation for Czechia at Eurovision back towards the end of the 2010s, was last in the role, I think, for the 2020 contest that was, of course, eventually cancelled. He's still a TV producer over in Czechia, and he was invited to be part of the Luxembourg jury. So I wanted to get him on the podcast to ask him how the whole thing worked. And I started by asking what it was like to be invited to be part of the jury.
First of all, I really like when I was on their position and I asked another producers or another people to join, for example, jury for Czech television when I was doing Eurovision in here. I always would be like, it was very helpful when somebody said just yes. And you can check out this person and say like, yes, I have the first one, second one, whatever. I have it all, but I have it. Because it's a crucial thing. And so for that, I said immediately, yes. And also, Luxembourg is coming after 30 years to Eurovision. For me, this is something new. And imagine before 2016, I had no clue about Eurovision, honestly, almost nothing. And now I'm part of somebody who's coming back. This is even like, what the hell? It's a big honor.
So you said that, you know, your previous roles helped with what you were able to offer RTL as a member of that kind of selection team that was going through the songs and narrowing down the shortlist for the broadcaster. What do you think those kind of positives are from your perspective? You know, you were head of delegation for the Czech Republic at Eurovision, TV producer, as you've said, someone who knows the industry. So what were you able to offer RTL as a juror?
Yeah. Yeah, like I don't know their perspective. I just think their perspective is they trust me. But from my position, from what how I try to honestly now describe myself, right, is more likely that whether I'm doing a job, whether I'm doing my YouTube channel, or whether we just chat like this or we meet in person in the bar, I'm honest. I think this is the thing that I'm not trying to play games. I'm not trying to say opinions which everybody will be satisfied with. I'm bringing myself into it. Of course, sometimes it's hard times for me, but I decided to be like that because that's what makes me happy, also what make me successful in my career, honestly.
One thing you, of course, have experience of is working with and for a broadcaster who will have relatively limited resources, especially when it comes to Eurovision. Which obviously is the case with RTL. They're not a big broadcaster. It's not a big country. So what are some of the restrictions, I suppose, for a broadcaster like RTL? And how do you have to work harder to kind of work around them when it comes to Eurovision to compete with some of the bigger nations and broadcasters?
Yeah, this is very funny because, for example, I've never seen such an like more professional approach than RTL actually has. I don't know their budget. But what they want, what they do is it's a big professional approach. They want to succeed. They created the panel of juries, make them watch like I would say hundreds. I think it was like 100 and something acts per 3 days live. So with the cameras, they put all the artists in front of us under pressure. They simulate the pressure of Eurovision. That it really is something huge. It's not a joke, you know? And they did this, and this is exclusive. So I don't know. You cannot say that they have low budget or something, because their approach is we believe the project and we want the best possible outcome for our national selection show. Whoever will win, it's clear that they want also the show to be amazing with the best possible outcome, with the best possible 8 acts. Out of those hundreds, you know, and they create the conditions for everybody, for the us jurors, for viewers, probably also for the artists to really experience the full scale Eurovision on a very small, of course, very small scale. But you know what I mean?
Can you kind of go into any more detail about how it works in terms of, you know, what happens? Do you watch all of the, you mentioned hundreds of performances, 100 plus performances, and then do you go and sit in a room with your fellow jurors? Are you ranking them on specific criteria? How does that work?
Yes, like, first of all, I think it must be said that we were 5 jurors over there, a little bit different backgrounds, or even completely different backgrounds. Singers, composers, executive producer, Christer Björkman as a legend, but as a legend producer also for me, come on, I was sitting in, I know that some Eurovision people don't like blah, 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 but he's a legend in TV industry for the professionals. Like, this is one of the best producers in the world. And you're sitting next to him and then you have a discussion. And of course, it's much easier to do the first 5, let's say, maybe first 4, maybe first 3, because they are clearly somewhere else, let's say. Yes, even in our opinion, how they were presenting themselves in front of us. The song, the music, their performance, as a performance, as a, like, all this package, you know?
And is there any consideration there, not just for who the eight should be in the selection, but for how well that artist or that song will do at the contest, if they are to get the Luxembourg ticket to, you know, the contest in Malmö?
Yeah, well, this is the biggest task of every jury anywhere in the world, or anywhere in the world, or even the producers who, or internal selection, whatever, to find an act which can succeed, right? So even the last eight act should be in our heads, the act which can succeed at Eurovision. This is the perspective. This is the goal. This is the task of the jury.
Last one on Luxembourg. Given everything that you've said, and I appreciate, you know, you are not from RTL, you're not speaking on their behalf at all, but what do you think would be viewed as a successful result for Luxembourg at Eurovision in 2024?
Like, this is very, very nice question, because in my perspective, from my eyes, everything, if they go to the finals, is a success, because they are coming back. When I saw what they have, and I said very technically, right, but I'm talking about people, acts, and so on. But if I saw, like, I cannot tell you, of course, I cannot comment on it right now. But for example, there was one act which blew my mind the way that live, I've never seen live performance like this ever in my life, ever, ever. And it maybe sounds absolutely crazy, but I'm very curious if this is going to transcend through television. But what I saw, I was like, please, I hope this never ends. Like, let this person sing more, longer, forever. I've never seen it in my life.
Well, that is very exciting. So we've got something to look forward to when it comes to the live show. And then, yeah, my last question, I want you to take off your Luxembourg juror's hat and potentially your previous Czechia hat as well. And just a question on the potential expansion of Eurovision, because we've seen Luxembourg return. We've seen various countries leave the contest for several reasons. How important is it that Eurovision keeps welcoming back former nations or attempts to expand into new nations in the coming years?
I think what somehow is misinterpreted among fans and viewers and the professionals is that Eurovision is very open to go in. It's very easy. Like, if you're a member of the EBU, you have a choice to go in. So it's not about, like, Eurovision is getting bigger, expanding. It's actually like, hey, everybody who wants to join. We have a perfect project for you. It's not really super expensive, in my opinion, for what you get. And also what you do as a public broadcasters in general for your music industry in your own countries and what potential it has. Come on, it's like 160 million people are watching it. It's like now we are used to this number, you know, it sounds like 160 million, but come on, no, like every country is happy if they have like 1 million, maybe 500K people, you know, 500K watching. And now we are talking about 160 million viewers. The door are open. And if you don't understand the possible, like, what, how important it can be, then there is something wrong with your management in your televisions, in my opinion.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Eurotrip,
the world's favourite Eurovision podcast.
Welcome back to the Eurotrip podcast. We've still got Michael Keeley on the way. But first, a big thanks to Jan Bors for finding some time to give us a bit more detail inside Luxembourg. It sounds like a hugely professional organisation that they've got going on there. And I think that's been clear from the start, really, hasn't it, since they announced they were coming back?
Yeah, so professional are the team over at RTL, the Luxembourg broadcaster, that they are very elusive. They're proving very tricky to track down, maybe because they're all in their Eurovision bunker and are all planning their the national final. But yeah, we really want to get someone from Luxembourg on the pod to talk about, obviously, the whole process of them returning to Eurovision and what their hopes are for 2024. You heard Jan say in the interview there that, you know, he thinks, and he's not speaking on behalf of RTL, but a good result, obviously, for Luxembourg on their return would be to qualify for the grand final and to be part of the show on the Saturday night. And James, you've got to agree.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, since we got the announcement on the eve of the 2023 contest that they were coming back, and then they told us they were going to do a national final, it just seems to be building up to something. And I am personally very looking forward to seeing the show.
That was a funny old day in the press centre, wasn't it, during Eurovision week, when they dropped the news that Luxembourg were returning to the contest. I don't think anyone was particularly expecting it. And it also came at that point in Eurovision week where you are, and you will appreciate this, whether you went to Eurovision as, you know, a fan and watched the shows, or whether you were part of the press, or however you were there in whatever capacity. But by the time you get to, say, Thursday, Friday, you don't really know what's happening. You're just sort of existing on no sleep. You don't even really know your own name. So I remember when we got the news that Luxembourg were returning to the contest, that was, yeah, it was a funny old day. But we got through it. And as the kids say, James, we move.
Did he? Okay. Well, let's move on even more, because it's worth us mentioning, we haven't yet on the podcast. We've got so many names that have done Eurovision before and are trying to do it again.
I don't know what it is about Malmö, but there are artists, of course, who competed the last time the contest was in Malmö in Sweden back in 2013, who were attempting to return again. Like, has Malmö got a really good pizza place and they just want to get, like, they want to find an excuse to go back? Is that what it is? So who have we got coming back from 2013? A man who has been on the podcast before, one of the most surreal interviews I've ever done, Andreas Pajarvis, who represented Lithuania. We've already mentioned her, Margaret Berger, of course, as well, who came fourth. But James, they are just two of many artists who are looking to come back to Eurovision, having represented their country in the past. Would you like me to just blast through a few of them?
Yeah, go on. Go, as many as you can.
Quick fire. Croatia, Damir Kedjo. Let 3, Estonia, Laura, who represented them in 2017, and also in 2005, when she was part of Sun Tribe. People always forget that, James. Italy, honestly, this is a long list. Diodato, Emma, Il Volo came third in 2015, won the televote. Mahmood, Eurovision 2019 and 2022. Richie and Paveri, Eurovision 1978. In Lithuania, The Roop are also back. Obviously, they were going to represent Lithuania in 2020 and then did so and came eighth in 2021. Villa, who represented Lithuania as well in Eurovision in 2014, came 11th in their semi-final, just missed out on a place in the grand final. In Moldova, Natalia Barbu, who represented them at Eurovision in 2007 and came 10th in the grand final. Back in Norway, we've already mentioned Margaret Berger, but Benedikt Adrian, we mentioned this on our Melody Grand Prix special episode. She was part of Dolly Deluxe and represented Norway in Eurovision 1984. And came 17th in the final. Kino are back, they came 6th in 2019. And Constructor returns for Serbia. And Melovin is back for Ukraine.
There's quite a lot of them then, isn't there?
No, one or two.
This isn't new though. We do often get artists who want to come back, but I wonder if it's part of the Loreen effect. You know, she's come back after 11 years, she won the contest. I wonder if it's inspired a lot of others from previous years to come back. Be interesting if we manage to speak to some of these and ask them that very question.
We will do our very best here on the podcast. Over the next few weeks, of course, as selection season continues, we'll be getting some national finalists on the podcast and some hopefully potential returning artists as well. Let us know who you would like to see, who you want us to try for here on the podcast. Do get in touch.
Yes, but let's turn our attentions to Ireland now, because Eurosong, their national final, is just a matter of days away. It is next Friday, so we're all looking forward to that.
Is it next Friday? That had completely passed me by. I didn't realise it was that soon.
It's coming around very, very quickly. They don't have any returning artists. It's worth mentioning right now. But they did announce all their artists last week, and it's safe to say that it went down a bit of a storm. It seems like a lot of you out there are big fans of the artists and big fans of the songs themselves. And a couple of the songs, which I'll mention with Michael in just a second, are doing very well online. So Michael Keely is the Irish head of delegation. He has been for quite a number of years, and he is very honest. He's very candid in this chat that I had with him earlier on today. We chat about Wild Youth's performance last year. We chat a bit about Eurosong and the selection process for the songs.
And of course, James, we have a special phone call to look forward to during this chat as well.
Yes, we do. We do. That is quite a fun bit. So make sure you listen out for that. But I'd love to hear, of course, what you think of Michael as you're listening. Do get in touch with us online at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram and so on. But let's get to it, shall we? This is what happened when I caught up with Michael Keely a little bit earlier on. Michael Keely, welcome back to the Eurotrip.
Thank you very much. Good to be here again.
Yes, good to have you on. It's been 12 months since we last had you on. We spoke to you in the run-up to Eurosong last year, so it's great to have you back on this year. All the songs are out already. Are you pleased with the variety and the reaction you've had so far?
Yes, I am, actually. Yeah, I think we've got 6 really, really good songs. I think we've got a very diverse range of genres as well for people to choose from. And I suppose that's one of the important things for us, is that not only we're looking for a song for Eurovision, but we're also looking to present a variety of songs to the public. You know, we're also trying to make a Eurosong show that's obviously, you know, highly watchable, and that's got a certain amount of excitement for the public here as well. So yeah, I'm very pleased with the songs. And you know, this year, for the first time, I was just looking yesterday on Spotify, and I was actually on Bambi Tugs, her own social media channels. Her song is top of the Irish viral top 50 today. So it's number one in the Irish viral top 50. So that's, an exciting development, that our songs for Eurosong are beginning to kind of get noticed in areas outside of the normal fan base, I suppose.
Yeah, they're cutting through already, aren't they? And also for Elsha, her song was played on Radio 1 here in the UK last night as well. So
I saw that as well, yeah, which is fantastic news for her. And it just reinforces, I suppose, for me in particular, that we seem to be on the right track. You know, I mean, that, you know, it's a long, long and winding track, but I think we're on the right one, you know.
Was there any bravery on your part to select songs that are a little bit, you know, a little bit more out there, a little bit braver than we might have heard in recent years?
To be honest, it's nothing to do with me, because I really don't. I assemble a kind of a panel of people who listen to a lot of the songs, and I would be one of the people that shortlist initially the 370 songs or 80 songs that we get. So it's really the panel that I pick that ends up selecting these songs, you know. So I'm glad that these ones came to the fore. I think it's just reflective also of the caliber of artist that is now interested in entering songs for the Eurosong. And that's really heartening for somebody like me, that we're beginning to get, you know, even people like JLOL. Sorry, James, hang on one sec. Can I give you a shout back in about half an hour or an hour? All right. Yeah, go on. Oh, yeah, it's going to be, I think, the 10th, 11th of March, something like that. Yeah, actually, it would be great if somebody was able to go. All right, thanks. See you, bye-bye. Sorry, James, that was just a question. Would you believe it was a question about the heads of delegation meeting?
Is that what it was?
Was that
the EBU ringing you? Was that Martin Osterdahl?
No, it was somebody in RT ringing me just to ask about what dates they were on, you know, so it wasn't Martin Osterdahl, no. He doesn't tend to ring me often, in fairness. What I was going to say was, it's heartening for me to see acts like JLOL, who is very credible artist here over, you know, a number of years, entering the competition as well, you know. So they're sticking their necks, you know, up, and they're sticking their heads over the parapet, and they're having a go, and they're not afraid to do that.
What do you think has changed for these artists to come forward and think, this is the right time for me?
Well, I think it's been sort of developing over a number of years, and I think one of the things has been that the way that Eurovision itself has evolved, and that we've seen acts like Maneskin coming through, and you know, and I think that has certainly helped the artists feel that this is actually an okay competition for them to enter. I feel, and people may disagree with me, but I think, you know, even last year, you know, when we had the likes of Public Image on our Eurosong, people looked at that and they said, well, here's a world, you know, a global act that's prepared to have a go at a Eurosong. They didn't win, and you know, there was no negative effects for their career, you know. So I think that's that kind of also helps, you know, that big acts are prepared to have a go. And do you know what? If they do and they don't get through, it doesn't matter.
Was there anything you did differently this year in terms of that selection process? You mentioned earlier how you select that panel who help advise you and choose that shortlist. Was there anything different you did this year compared to the last couple of years?
Well, I expanded the panel this year. I had over 40 people on the panel. They were a mixture of people who work in the music business, they were people who work in entertainment, people who work in radio stations, in television. And I had a good selection of fans as well from Ireland, and people who had kind of contacted me and asked me could they be on the panel. So I think that that the kind of an expanded panel definitely helped, because, you know, when you get 45 people listening to 60 songs, that it becomes fairly clear fairly quickly which ones are the more popular ones, you know. So so I was glad to see, because I listened to them all. I didn't vote in that panel myself. I didn't think it would be fair for me to vote in that panel. But I was glad to see that the songs I had thought were good were the ones that emerged, you know, to the top. To be honest, we've only got really space for six finalists on our Eurosong show. That's just due to limitations of facilities and resources in RTE. But, I mean, we could have had double that number, you know what I mean? Because I thought there was another six songs in there at least, you know, and maybe more that would have been good to put to the public as well. And I think that in future years, I'm like a broken record talking about this, but we should be doing a Eurosong that is a standalone competition that exists on its own over multiple weeks, you know, and that gives a lot more artists the opportunity to have a go and present their songs on television for the public, you know.
And just to touch on that, I know you've mentioned this in the past, but it's worth mentioning, you would love to do this show as a standalone, but this is just to do with resources and budget, isn't it?
Yeah, there's been, in Ireland, RTE has gone through a pretty rough time over the last 6 months. I don't know how much of it you would be aware of in Newcastle, but it has been pretty rough, yeah. And our resources, where we thought they were reasonably stable, kind of hit the bricks, I suppose, for a lot of pretty much self-inflicted reasons from the organization. And that suddenly caused a bit of a crunch in terms of our ability to, you know, our finances and our ability to spend money on new endeavors, let's just say. That was a bit disappointing that suddenly the money wasn't there. I had been hoping that we might have been at a place in RT where we could look at doing something like that, that it was getting on the agenda in you know, on across the desks that matter. And but unfortunately, I said, once the sort of credit crunch hit us, that really was off the tables. But I'm hopeful that, you know, things might settle down later this year, our finances may be put on a more stable footing, and we may hopefully have the money to do something like it. If not, well, I'm hoping. Let's just say next year. Let's just hope. Let's be hopeful.
Let's be optimistic.
It's going to happen next year. Yeah, it's going to happen next year.
It could have been a possibility then, do you think, for this year, if it wasn't for that turmoil last year, that, you know, the right people were nodding their heads and willing to give this a go?
I won't say it was going to definitely happen, but I certainly think there was a fair chance that it could have. Yeah. But once that issue arose in June of 2023, suddenly all bets were off. You know, I mean, the existence of the organization was in question there for a while. But thankfully, I think that settled down. And, you know, there seems to be a willingness amongst sort of political classes here to possibly sort out RT's finances once and for all. I won't say it's going to happen because I've been, you know, this has been something that has been ongoing for decades here.
I was going to say, funding. You've been around the block a few times, Michael, at RT, you know, you can't be too certain.
Absolutely. And, you know, James, I feel for anybody working in public service media, particularly in the UK as well, where I know there's a huge downturn in advertising revenue and there is a crunch going on there too. And so it's not an easy place to be in public service broadcasting at the moment. It's under threat for lots of different reasons all over Europe and beyond, for other reasons. And it's, I suppose, it just reinforces in my mind, and I suppose other people's minds as well, how important it is to have independent public service broadcasting.
Too right. Absolutely, Michael. Can I quickly touch on last year, another disappointing result, probably another hard result for you to take as well. Obviously, Wild East didn't progress through the semi-finals to the final. Was that a tough one to take on, another bad result like that?
Look, it doesn't get easier every year, you know. It's every year it's that we don't qualify is hugely disappointing because, you know, there is a different set of people that literally go on this journey with me to Liverpool or to Malmo or to wherever. They invest an awful lot in in their act and in the staging of the song and all that kind of stuff. And they put in the hard work, and while you certainly put in the work. So it is hugely disappointing when we don't get through. And, you know, it's not easy. Obviously, people are human, and this takes a very human toll on people when they get so publicly, you know, rebuffed in Eurovision. But the same was true with Brooke, the same was true with Leslie, the same was true with, you know, all of the people that I've been down this road with. So it's not easy. And I really feel for the people that do it, because they're the ones ultimately, they only get to go to it, generally speaking, once in their lives, maybe twice if they're lucky. I have I get to go a lot more often than other people. So it is a once in a lifetime opportunity for these people. So it is hugely disappointing. Yeah, I do feel for them. And no, it doesn't get easier.
Is it hard for you as well? Because, you know, you put yourself out there, you know, you come on podcasts like the Eurotrip and elsewhere, and you answer these questions. But I think you get a lot of flack, don't you? And possibly because you put yourself out there. Do you deserve this much flack?
Well, of course I'm going to say no, I don't. No is the answer, but I understand that fans are frustrated. So when we don't qualify, people, you know, they need somebody they don't want to blame the act, you know, in fairness, they don't want to blame the act. So the easiest thing to do is to blame RTE. They say, well, you know, RTE shouldn't have sent Wild Youth, RTE shouldn't have picked that song, RTE shouldn't have, you know, done whatever, or me or whoever. The reality is the public and the juries picked the song. The act wrote the song. I didn't write the song. I didn't go out on stage and sing it. Sometimes I feel people think that's what I do, you know, and I get the blame for doing all that kind of stuff. But look, I'm an adult. I can take it. Some of it is grossly unfair. Some of it is downright abusive. Try not to pay too much attention to that, because very often it is, particularly on social media, I mean, you know, it's ill-informed and uneducated comment, you know, so I don't, it's easy to ignore, because it's the people who are making those kind of comments actually don't understand what they're talking about.
Fair play. You handle it probably much better than I would. I think I would take it to heart too much.
you get used to it over time, James, let me just say that.
Should we focus on this year, 2024? Patrick Keelty, you've got a new host for Eurosong this year. Is he going to bring a new element to the show, do you think?
Well, yeah, of course he will. I worked with him just before Christmas. We did a New Year's Eve show, and he is he's great to work with. I inhabit the same office space as the Late Late Show, so I see him on a regular basis, and he is... He's very enthusiastic, and he's very up for doing new things. I don't know how much of a fan of the Eurovision he is. He's certainly a watcher of it, but I'm not sure if he's one of these you know, super fans that we get. But I certainly think he's interested in it, and I think he will bring something different to it than Ryan did. You know, so we'll just have to wait and see. I think the studio setup will be slightly different as well to the normal Late Late Show. So I think that will help with a lot of people give out about our studio facilities, and that's fair enough, you know. But unfortunately, there's nothing we can do about that. But people still give out about the fact that it's on the Late Late Show, or it's under the Late Late Show, you know, brand on a Friday night. But the truth is, you know, they say, and this is the kind of ill-informed comment you get on online, is that people say, oh no, the Late Late Show, oh sure, only old people watch that, and they're the people that are going to be watching the Eurosong, and that they're the people that are going to be voting on the act, so therefore they're not going to send the right act. That's the view, quite a prevalent view among some people online who should probably know better. But because really what happens in reality is that when you do a Eurosong, you first of all, the Late Late Show, is the audience for it is not exclusively old people. That's absolutely a fallacy if people think that. I know, because I'm working television, so I look at figures. This is our stock and trade. We look at figures, we look at demographics, and that's, you know, the currency that we deal in. And so I know it very well. It's actually quite quite a well balanced audience, you know, between young people and you know, the different demographics. But there's quite a lot of young people watching the Late Late Show on any given Friday, more so on a Eurosong. When you do a special show like this, you attract in a whole other demographic who want to see the show, who would normally be watching something else. So it doesn't, you know, that kind of criticism, sorry, just to go back to the criticism that people give me, the kind of criticism that the Late Late Show is exclusively a sort of an old people show is wrong. And when we do a Eurosong on it, the audience, the youth audience increases significantly anyway. So the key thing I would say is that whoever is watching the Late Late Show Eurosong is that they need to get involved. If they want to give out about the act that we select, they can only do so if they actually vote. You know, it's a bit like voting in a general election. You can't give out about the government unless you vote.
Yeah, very true. Very true, Michael. Talking about people voting, you're going to have a public vote, jury vote. Is that going to be the same as we've seen recently?
It's going to be the same as last year, yeah. We have, last year we introduced the, I think it was 2 years ago, we introduced the international jury. And I think that's brought a new dimension to it as well. So it's a third, a third, a third. It's the public vote, the national jury, and the international jury. And yeah, so that's the same, going to be the same again this year. I had thought in one of my sort of, you know, when I woke up screaming in the middle of the night, I thought maybe we should put a fan jury in there as well and have a kind of a four-way vote. But it was too late at that stage to change the rules. So maybe in future years.
Interesting. So do you think that would sort of help balance out, you know, all those different parts of the voting?
The public vote for different reasons than a national jury and an international jury. So very often the public, particularly in a small country like Ireland, people will vote based on where you're from geographically, as opposed to how good your song is. So if you're from, you know, some small parish in Tipperary, you might be able to rally the whole community behind you to vote for your song. Now, I don't think any of our acts are from a small parish in Tipperary. No, I'm only picking that as an example, but I apologise if somebody is from a foot, but I don't think so. So do you know what I mean? So the public can vote very often for different reasons and motivations to a national jury and an international jury, who I think are a bit more balanced in knowing the competition. They know the competition probably a little better than the casual viewer as well. And I think they can be better placed sometimes to look at an act and to see its potential on a big stage.
Have you got any special interval acts lined up for the show? I know it's 30 years since Paul and Charlie won, of course. Are they going to make a special appearance?
Well, we do have. You see, the thing about the Eurosong is that it's not just, like, I'm not the producer of the Late Late Show, so I look after different things. I look after the juries and I look after the acts. The Late Late Show production team look after the interval acts and the studio panel, that kind of thing. I do know for a fact that there is a very special interval act. Yeah, very special interval act.
And that's all you're going to say?
That's all I can say. They'll kill me if I say any more, but it's a very special interval act that have travelled some distance to be with us. That's all I'll say.
Oh, You've stumped me here. I'm going to be thinking for far too long trying to figure out who this might be. And you're still not going to say anything. I was going to give you an opportunity.
I'll leave it at that. Otherwise, I'll be back when I go into work.
Michael, I want to take the opportunity to ask you about Israel. There's been growing calls for the EBU to take a stance and potentially remove them from Eurovision this year. Is that something that's on your mind at all?
Well, I mean, obviously it is something that's there in the background. I've said to people here before as well that this is not, it's not a competition between governments. This is a competition between public service broadcasters. The public service broadcaster in Israel is an independent broadcasting organization like RTE. It's independent of the government. It's not a mouthpiece for Netanyahu. So that's the first thing I'll say. But look, it's not something I would be in favor of necessarily, but it's not something for me to call. It's something for the EBU to decide. So whatever the EBU decide to do, obviously I'm happy to go along with those people who are much more intelligent and much wiser than me on these issues, you know.
We saw a protester on stage in Melody Grand Prix in Norway. I don't know if you saw that. Is that a concern for you for the Late Late Show?
Of course it is. Anytime you do live television, there is the possibility that something like that might happen. I've been involved in programs over the years where that has happened, and it's just one of the hazards that you are aware of and that you're prepared for and that you can deal with quite quickly if it does occur, particularly when you have a studio audience. You can't screen your audience for, you know, their political views necessarily. The other thing I will say about calls for RTE to boycott the Eurovision, because there are a lot of calls for us to withdraw from the Eurovision because Israel are in it. I think that would set a very dangerous precedent if we do that in RTE, because we're not a political organization. We're a public service broadcaster. I also think then that it will give us, you know, I think you'd have to say, well, then should we be involved in the Olympics? Should we be involved in the World Cup? Should we be involved in any major international competition where Israel are involved, if that's what happens, you know? So I'm not in favor of it. And I said to you, I think I'll leave it up to the people in Geneva who are much wiser on this issue.
Looking more widely then at 2024, what do you think would represent a good result for Ireland? Is it just a tick in the box of qualifying to that grand final? Would you sort of mop your brow to say, phew, we've done it?
Well, do you know, qualification obviously would be great, because just given our terrible record over the last 10 years, qualification would be great. I think we've got some songs in our national final that have the potential to do extremely well if they get to the Eurosong. If they get to the Eurovision. And, I would be very hopeful that we could do more than just qualify.
And we're chatting, 10 days away from Eurosong? Have you still got plenty to do?
I've loads to do, would you believe? I'm not only doing I would love to do nothing but Eurovision all year round. But I mean, I've been already this morning talking to people about our New Year's Eve show this year, which will be
already
20, yeah, would you believe, on the 16th of January. So I've got the St. Patrick's Day is coming down the line, which I have to be involved in as well. So there's plenty of other stuff to keep me going, believe me. But look, I'm not complaining.
Absolutely not. Michael, thank you so much for your time. You've been so generous with it, and I wish you the best of luck for next week.
All right. Thanks a lot, James.
And there he goes, Michael Keeley, for our what seemingly is now our annual catch-up before Eurosong. James, a really open and candid conversation, and interesting to see where his head is at going into Eurosong next week.
Yeah, I always like to chat to Michael, because he is one of these who will just tell you exactly what he thinks. And I thought it was really worth asking if he thinks he deserves all that flack. I thought it was worth an ask, because he does. He's possibly the person involved in Eurovision who gets almost more flack than anybody else. And I wonder if he thought he deserves that. So big thanks to Michael for being so candid on all that. But generally, I think there's huge amounts of excitement for Eurosong next week.
Yeah, very, very interesting to see who gets the Irish ticket to Malmö. Now, James, it is time to end the podcast with the first 1 second song of 2024. Before we recorded, I attempted to persuade you that we should start from scratch at the start of the year because I'm currently quite a long way behind. It is currently 7-0 to you. James, it is you that's picked the song this week for me, I understand.
It is indeed very last minute, so there's no thought gone into this whatsoever. I've just opened up a folder of Eurovision songs on my laptop, clicked the first one I saw, and clipped the first second for you. So there's no rhyme or reason for this one. So hopefully, for your sake, it is nice and easy. So let's have it, shall we? This is this week's 1 second song.
Okay, I was really hoping when you said it was easy that it would be Loreen and Tattoo, Sweden 2023. You've not quite gone that easy.
I feel like this could be achievable. Let's have it one more time.
Okay. I have a guess. I don't know if it is correct. I don't even know if this was the right year. I may get my years wrong. I may get my countries wrong. I may get the song wrong. But here we go. I think, James, I don't know if anyone listening to this may have the same guess as me. I think this is Greece 2013. Can't remember the name of the group. But is it Oppa?
Well, you've hit the post with a couple of those bits, but I'm happy to give you 2 points.
Oh, I'll take two. I'm very happy to get off the bottom rung of the scoreboard because before today I had 0 points. So yeah, very pleased with two. Go on.
Yeah, so you got Greece, and it was Oppa. It wasn't 2013; it was 2010. So a few years out, but I'll let you off. And it was Georgios Alkaios. And friends.
Yeah, I was never getting Georgios Alkaios and friends. Oh, well, let's have a listen, shall we? I will take that. I will take being 7-2 down. That sounds a lot better than being 7-0 down. Although, of course, next week you will have an opportunity to extend your lead once more.
As Rob picks something from Eurovision 1959. Just you wait. You'll do it again.
You'll be lucky. You'll be lucky.
Anyway, that is just about it from us for this week. We'll be back with you in 7 days' time for a brand new episode of the Eurotrip. In the meantime, of course, don't forget, you can keep in touch with us online. We'd love to hear from you. We are at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow us on TikTok as well. You can send us an email, hello@eurotrippodcast.com, and read all of our exclusive stories, of which, of course, there are a few from today, on eurotrippodcast.com.
And don't forget, if you love what we do here on the podcast and you'd like to say thank you, then feel free to buy us a coffee. That would be lovely. If you want to donate just a few pounds to help us keep the lights on here at Eurotrip Podcast HQ and maybe make it possible that we hopefully, fingers crossed, might be able to make it to Malmö for Eurovision 2024, then you can head to buymeacoffee.com/Eurotrip Podcast.
Yes, indeed. We'll be forever grateful. As well, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and rate us 5 stars. From me, James, it is goodbye.
And from me, Rob, it's goodbye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.